in order to improve, we have to let go of what we did yesterday.
I'd like to welcome David Marquet to the Productivityist Podcast. David, thanks for joining me today.
Mike, thanks for having me on your show, and welcome all listeners.
So the book is called Leadership is Language, and as soon as I read the title, I'm like, okay, there's some subtext here, which is of course language. What led you to write this book, and why is the understanding of leadership being a language so important?
Yeah, so I wrote a book called Turn the Ship Around, which was my story as a submarine commander and experience I had, very unexpected experience as a leader, where basically I ended up turning everything on its head, giving control instead of taking control. When I gave orders, which I tried to do as rarely as possible, trying to create as big of a sense of ambiguity as possible and let people interpret it if possible. And then also try not to be as deterministic. Everything was a probability. Well, I think I got an 80% that the enemy is here, but there's 20% the enemy's not here. Well, these were all things we had to learn. We had to learn how to talk in a different way. And language, and basically you can't control. The ship I took over was the worst performing, had the worst morale, and there's a lot you can't control. Who's coming, the structure, the schedule, the schools people go to. But we could control the way we talk to each other. And it turns out this is hugely, hugely powerful. And so this book, Leadership is Language, goes deeper into that. And the basic hypothesis is that so we go to organizations and they want to be enlightened. They want to let their people have decision-making authority. They want to run meetings where it's safe to speak up. But over and over and over again, the pre-programmed language that people would default to was unhelpful. And I felt it in myself. I felt myself saying, so does that make sense? Mm. Well, that's self-affirming. In other words, it makes it easy. I just want head nods. Does that make sense? Uh-huh. Right? Uh-huh. We good? Uh-huh. And the problem is, what you really want is to make it easier for people to disagree. It's already easy to agree and hard to disagree from a social perspective and from a hierarchy perspective. So what you need to do is go push the seesaw in the other direction. And so over and over and over again, we came up with these, well, you know, don't say it that way. Say it this way. Here's another example. We'd ask questions like, is it safe? Will it work? Should we launch the product? And these are all binary.
Right.
And the person could be feeling, should we launch the product? Well, yeah. I mean, you really didn't learn anything there. If you said, how confident are you in product launch, or how strongly do you support product launch next Wednesday? And they say 98% or 52%. You learned a lot, and then you could dig into it. And then when you get the team responding that way, it's much more nuanced, and we learn a lot. But over and over and over again, the way we would see meetings run was the unhelpful way.
I want to talk about the idea of red work and blue work, because when I opened up the book and looked at it as an outsider, because I'm a Canadian, I'm like, red and blue. When I hear red and blue, I'm like, wait a minute. Just for clarification, what are these concepts of red work and blue work? Can you share with my audience what those mean?
Yeah, so they're apolitical terms in my context. So the idea is, and this came from the way we thought about work on the submarine, which was very, very helpful, which was there's two kinds of work, and they use your brain differently, and they have different approaches to variability. The work that most of us do, the work itself, is what we would call red work. So typical classic red work is a person on an assembly line. Simple, physical, repeated tasks. Now, it could be complex tasks. It could be coding, but it is the work. I'm operating on a patient. I'm flying an airplane. I'm writing code. I'm checking someone into the front desk of the hotel. I'm operating a nuclear power plant. Whatever it is, it's the work itself. And the idea is, red work benefits from us being focused. You got to paying attention, right?
Yep.
So see there, I said, right. See, self-affirming. I even don't even follow my own advice. So what you want to say, by the way, is, you know, what didn't make sense? What could be wrong? What was unclear? So anyway, so red work is the work. Blue work is thinking about the red work. Blue work tends to be cognitive. It tends to be a little more complicated. It tends to involve other people. And the key is blue work benefits from variability. Red work is hurt by variability. Manufacturing, productivity, following a process, you don't want variability. But blue work, we say, oh, let's get some new ideas. All innovation is variability from the status quo. So the problem we see is organizations apply a red work rule book or a red work playbook or red work language when what they really want is blue work. And so the result is that they're reducing variability. We'll go to a meeting and say, hey, so I'm trying to get everyone on board here. That's reducing variability of thought when what they want to be doing is the opposite. And this is the exact same impact that saying, that does that make sense, right? I'm reducing, I'm collapsing everybody's, I'm just making it harder for the outliers to speak up. And this, and then we know from research that teams where outliers speak up are more robust and more resilient, they're more innovative. All innovation starts in position. The thing that we already all think is not an innovation, newsflash. It's the thing that sounds weird to us. Hey, we could do ABC, that's weird. That's a potential innovation. So the idea is, be clear, are we doing red work or blue work? If you're doing red work, then you wanna be focused, you wanna avoid variability, processes, operations, running nuclear power plants, safety procedures, wear your seatbelt. I don't want you to wear your seatbelt some of the time. There would be variability. I want it all the time, low variability in wearing your seatbelt. But then it's like, well, where are we going to go tonight? That's blue work. What's decision? What decision are we going to make? It's blue work. We want to embrace variability. So the rhythm of life and the rhythm of work oscillates back and forth between these two.
Let's talk a bit about the playbook. You know, you call this like a new playbook for leaders. Why is it a playbook per se? Is it just because there are these, like, it's that combination of, okay, here's the red work, here's the blue work. Like, what is that? How do you lean into that as a playbook per se?
So that's the basic framework, and you can,
sure.
But the idea was I found in the patterns of language that there were these certain recurring situations. So, for example, a team has to make a decision, or a leader gets bad news, or you hear something unexpected. Someone brings some new information into the situation. Someone challenges you. Someone says the decision that you made or about to make is bad. And there are these sort of standard situations that come up over and over again. They come up when we're dealing with our families. They come up at work. And we respond in certain ways. And to me, it started having this idea of it's like a play. It's like a football play. And I just I was like mulling this over and how am I going to talk about it? And I got on the airplane. It's flying from I was flying from San Francisco back to Tampa on the red end. A guy sits down next to me and he plops out this big football playbook. And it's got an Oakland Raiders logo on the front. He has three of these big binders, honking binders. And I said, is that a playbook? He goes, yeah, Oakland Raiders playbook. I said, well, that's cool. Tell me about it. And he said, well, and he flips it open. And the first, all the plays at the beginning don't have anything to do with football. They have to do with how to behave in the locker room, on the practice field.
Right.
In life. And I said, well, why is it organized? Like, why'd you organize it like this? And he said, and his first words out of his mouth are, it's all about language. And I'm like, who are you? And he's like, he's John, who turned out was John Gruden.
Yeah.
Just got signed to be head coach. I'm like, oh, sorry, dude. I didn't know who you were. Like, just signed a $100 million contract. I'm like, oh, yeah. Hey, John. Yeah, John Gruden. So anyway, I was like, that's it. It's a playbook. That's a sign from the heavens. And so anyway, at least from sort of an American perspective, It's really exactly the right metaphor, because we really need to re-script these plays. The problem is businesses are saying, let's run the old play better. Let's keep running that play. But the problem is they're just running the wrong play.
Right. Right. And to your point about blue work and red work, I mean, I remember reading The Score Takes Care of Itself by Bill Walsh, because I'm a huge football fan, and I'm a huge Bengals fan, unfortunately.
Yeah. But,
well, you know, we might get Burrow, so there you go. In fact, by the time this comes out, we may already have him. But he was talking about like the fundamentals, and that's that red, like, I mean, the blue work, to your point, is what you use to evaluate to make sure the red work is the right work, which is right.
Yeah. So the blue work comes before and after the red work.
Right.
So when teams that are not thinking about what they're doing are just doing red work all day. They're just renting DVDs. They're making print film. They're doing whatever they're doing. And they're doing it because they're good at it and they just keep doing it. But they're not evaluating, and the world changes and they missed it, and then they're out of business.
Right.
So a unit of work is a decision to do something, and then you launch into, and then you do it, and then you pause and you reflect afterwards. And this pattern, decide, do, pause and reflect, is what the leader needs to focus on. And for example, one of the key questions is, how long do I do something, or how long do I think about it before we commit to doing it? And when things become dicier, when things are moving faster, when things have become more uncertain, the key is you got to make those doing cycles, you got to shorten it up. So if teams used to be doing 3-week sprints, and now COVID-19 comes along, maybe you're doing 1-week sprints, maybe you're doing 1-day sprints. Maybe at the end of each day, you're saying, okay, let's reevaluate. How should we adjust course? What new products should we be looking at? So if you're used to doing, you'd run a process for a quarter, and then we'd evaluate, hey, let's look at the data for the last 3 months. How have we been doing? You might want to shorten that up to like 1 month. And that evaluation, that review of the data, is the blue work part of it. And then what you're going to do about it is blue work. And then you commit and you change the process, and then you go to red work. But here's the key. You don't keep tweaking the process, because if you keep tweaking the process too much, then you never get stabilized data.
Right. Right. And I mean, I've talked about that with my own productivity framework, where people are like, oh, I say theme your day. So give your day a theme based on the things you know to be true, work around your certainties. And then they'll say, okay, so like this Monday is my admin day, and then next Monday is my communication day. I'm like, no. Monday needs to always be admin day, because otherwise, you know what I mean? Right. Like otherwise it's not going to work, right?
It's chaos, a mess, right? And it creates ambiguity, which adds a cognitive load. Don't let people spend cognitive load. So I was working with a construction company. This was funny. And They were doing well, and it was a site. They were building luxury condos on the waterfront of one of the East Coast cities, and they had the plans in the trailer where they had their meetings. They had the plans taped on the wall. One was the concrete plan, the electrical plan, the site plan, these different plans. And I walk in there. They're all different directions. Like in one plan, like, which way is north? And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, no, north is that way here, but it's that way there. I'm like, this is crazy, because every plan. So let's make them all the same. And oh, by the way, let's make it. So, for example, the trailer was in a certain location on the site and was oriented in a certain way. Let's make it actually, so when I look out the window and I'm sitting next to this plan, that the thing that I see would be logical based on what the, so is an example of making, it's a totally unnecessary cognitive burden. Anytime you ask people to make translations in their minds, linear to circular,
jargon,
left, right, to right, left.
Overusing jargon that.
Yeah, jargon. What do you really mean? Ambiguity in the words that we use. So the most basic thing for an organization is to have an organizational dictionary.
Right.
And I've been to organizations where I go down to the customer service people, and they're saying, well, our customers, blah, blah, blah. And then you go and you talk to the engineers, and they say, well, our clients, da, da, da. And then you talk to the marketing people, and they talk about our A, B, C leads. I was like, well, who are, like, what? And like, they're, no, that's the same as this. Like, well, why don't we just say the same word? It removes, they can't even do training together because they don't even understand the language. And like, I don't care what you call it, but let it be the same.
Okay, we're going to take a break from the conversation, but when we come back, David's going to explain what he means by the be good self and the get better self, which is something he references in the book, as well as one of the simplest or perhaps best actions that you can take to get started with using leadership as language today. But before we get into that, I want to share some thoughts with you on another way that you can level up your leadership, and that's through the UCI Division of Continuing Education. The UCI Division of Continuing Education has courses and certifications in a wide range of categories, from business and leadership to IT, project management, law, human resources, and over 60 convenient certificates and specialized studies programs on campus and online designed for the working professional. Established in 1962, the UCI Division of Continuing Education has been offering education for adult learners in Orange County for over half a century, and they maintain over 30,000 enrollments from students worldwide each year and offer hundreds of exciting courses and programs to local, regional, and global constituencies. You get convenient, quality online education. There's never a better time to take advantage of what the UCI Division of Continuing Education has to offer, and as you can hear, UCI Division of Continuing Education is not a new thing. They are not new to online education. For years, they've been providing students with quality online courses, and you can learn on your own time online. Now, you can use continuing education as a way to stay abreast of developments and best practices in your field. Now, let me explain the difference between certificate programs and specialized studies programs, both of which are available. Certificate programs offer an in-depth body of knowledge to ensure you gain mastery of a particular topic. Specialized studies feature shorter, more concentrated curricula for those that are short on time. Now, both are distinctive achievements that can help prepare you for career advancement or transition. Now, spring enrollment is open today. So you want to go to ce.uci.edu/productivityist and then enter the promo code TIMECRAFTING to get 15% off of one course. That's ce.uci.edu/productivityist and then enter the promo code TIMECRAFTING to get that 15% discount off of one course. Now, this offer is only valid until July 31st at 11:59 p.m., and the discount is for almost all of the certificate programs. The exceptions only include coding boot camps, international programs, teacher credentialing programs, and test prep courses. So don't delay. Enroll today. Visit ce.uci.edu/productivityist and then enter the promo code TIMECRAFTING to get your 15% off of one course now. And this is normally where I would talk about my Productivityist podcast pick of the week, but I want to take it to you this time around. I want to hear what you're listening to, because I've got a plethora of podcasts that are on my playlist, but I'd like to hear what you want to listen to and what you might want to recommend to me as a podcast that I could check out. So if you have a podcast that you're a fan of, or maybe it's a podcast that you host, I'd love to hear from you. Maybe it can be one of the Productivityist podcast picks of the week. Just send me an email at podcast@productivityist.com and let me know what podcasts you listen to. I'll add them to my playlist and I'll see whether or not it's one of those ones that I make my Productivityist podcast pick of the week. So again, email me at podcast@productivityist.com with your podcast of choice or your list of podcasts of choice, and I'll give them a listen. Now, let's get back to my conversation with David Marquet here on the Productivityist podcast. I want to shift gears for a second and talk about the idea of the good self, the be good self, and the get, and the get better self. I mean, I'm not saying it's ambiguous, but like, what's the distinction there so that people don't?
What's the difference between being good and get, you felt it. So the be good self is rooted in proving that I'm worthy, that I deserve my salary, that I'm a good person, that I can hold my head high when I go to the coffee machine and I feel good about my life. And the be good self is constantly trying to prove itself. It's trying to say, oh, look what I did. Oh, wasn't that project good? Oh, no, I didn't make any mistakes. So unfortunately, the be good self tends to be closed, defensive, and allergic to feedback. The get better self has a perspective of, well, how am I going to be in 6 months? How am I going to be in 3 years? Am I going to be doing the same old thing? Am I going to be no better than I am today? And the get better self strives to improve. But the problem is the get better. In order to improve, we have to let go of what we did yesterday. We have to admit to ourselves what I did yesterday wasn't as good as it could have been. Otherwise, there's no improvement. So the problem is that the get better self and the be good self don't get along. And the be good self, in toxic environments, the be good self, it feels unsafe, and the be good self is the one that's in charge. And we hear in the language, well, everyone did the best they could, but we sucked. Or John, it's not your fault. You didn't have the resources. And we have to have all these excuses. In healthy environments where it's safe, we just give up the past, even though we were the ones that created it. And we say, well, how would we do it better next time? If we knew what we do know now, what would we do different? And we don't spend time being defensive about who made what decision when. We just learn and move on. And those organizations are healthier, they're more adaptive, and they're the ones who are doing better during this coronavirus.
I want to talk about the idea of intent-based leadership. Literally before we hopped on the call today, I got an email that you have a course that you're teaching there at Bathright about intent-based leadership. And I talk about intention and attention as being the like real cornerstones of productivity. The other stuff, efficiency, effectiveness, I think those are byproducts of it. But unless you have intention partnered up with attention, then you're going to be doing a lot of the wrong things or things in the wrong order or what have you. This obviously ties into the book about being like intent-based leadership. Can you explore that and share that a bit with my audience? Because I think that there's some real power behind that.
So again, it's about the language that we use. So let's say you want to have a quote empowering workplace or empowerment, or you want whatever that means. So first question is, what do you mean by that? Well, the way we approach it, because everything comes from our language, stems from our language, is the question we ask ourselves, what would it sound like if? I say, well, what would it sound like? So the CEO says, this person needs to feel more empowered. They need to act more empowered. I said, what would it sound like if they were more empowered? They would come to the meeting and say this. Okay, so we catalog these different things that people would say.
Right.
And there's a structure to it. At the bottom of the ladder, people say, tell me what to do. And then we say, well, how does the boss respond to that? And we always go, we call it leveling up. So next rung is, what do you see? It's not what some people, a lot of people make a mistake and say, well, you know, you tell me what you would do. This is too far, too fast. That's level 5 or 6. So we say, what do you see? Just description, feel safe. Then what do you think? Then what would you do? What would you like permission to do? And from the other side is, hey, I like permission to do it. Now, the key with permission is it doesn't happen unless the boss says no. So if you send an email, I like permission to do the following, and you never get a response, it never happens. Level 5 on the ladder, there's 7 steps. Level 5 is intent. This is what I intend to do. Now, the key is, there are 2 keys. Number 1 is it activates a conversation before the decision is made. Because it's not like, here's what I did.
Right.
Here's what I intend to do next week, next month, tomorrow, whatever, 2 minutes. And here's why. And here's why it's the right thing to do. And here's why it's safe to do. And if the boss doesn't respond, no one responds to that email, and you know what happens? It happens. And so there's a bias for action. And that's the second thing. So it's sparks conversations, so there's transparency, it's inviting feedback, and there's a bias for action. So our experience is that this word intent is a magic word, because in most organizations, most people think that these ideas of distributed decision making, where everybody's thinking and taking ownership, and unity of effort are at cross purposes. I have to trade one for the other. I can have high command and control. I get great unity of effort, but I got low distributed decision making. Or I can have high levels of empowerment, but then I have sort of a random assortment of actions which are only vaguely coordinated. But with intent, you get both. And it decouples the traditional relationship, and you get distributed decision making, which activates ownership thinking, and it feels good because you're making decisions and you're using your brain. Like, that's what humans like. And we get coordinated, unified effort, and the team's working together. So we think it's a magic word.
Before we wrap up, David, I just want to give my audience members, the listeners here now, they're going to go pick up the book. We're going to link to it in the show notes. But if they want to get started today with applying the leadership as language, what can they do?
Your question with the word how. Okay. Stop saying, listen to yourself and just think about how many times you say you just give a programmed automatic response, and what are the different kinds of situations. But one of the ones is how we ask questions, and we tend to ask questions. A lot of the questions we ask tend to have a secret agenda. We're trying to, hey, did you think about the customer? Secret agenda. You didn't think about the customer, and I need to teach you that. Hey, why would you want to do that? Secret agenda. I think that's a dumb idea, and you need to really prove it. So you want to try and remove those secret agendas, and one of the best ways to do it is to start the question with the word how. It makes it more neutral. It makes it open-ended. And instead of boxing the person into saying, for example, should we launch a product on time, how strongly do you support it? So we talked about it at the very beginning, but I think it's a very simple and easy way to just think about the language that you use and practice some different phrases. And you try different things, but you'll see what we see in general is that if you ask better questions, you're going to get more thinking and better responses.
David, this has been a fantastic interview, fantastic conversation. I mean, the great thing about this is that I love the meshing of like the things, like the red work and the blue work. I think was one of those things where when I went through the book, I'm like, okay, this makes sense. I think there's a lot there that I think people, they can apply this not just organizationally, but even in their own, like they don't have to just do this inside of an org. They can lead their own lives this way, right? Like they can go, you know, this is when I need to operate this way. This is when I need to operate this way.
Yes.
Where can people learn more about you and your work and keep up with what you've got going on?
Yeah, so grab the book, Leadership is Language. Let me know what you think. Send me an email, david@turntheshiparound.com. That's my first book. Our thing is called Intent-Based Leadership, intentbasedleadership.com, LinkedIn, Intent-Based Leadership Institute, social media, @LDavidMarquet, MARQUET. If you just Google Intent-Based Leadership or David Marquet, you'll probably get there. The most fun thing, I think, though, is go to YouTube, type in Leadership Nudges. And we have these little one-minute videos we put out once a week. Just little snippets, things like, hey, start the question with how. Vote first, then discuss, not discuss, then vote first. And these are just little tidbits and reminders of how you can be the leader that you probably want to be. And you don't need more training. You just need an occasional reminder.
David, thanks so much for joining me today on the Productivities Podcast.
Cheers, Mike. Thanks for having me on your show.